Ciro, where are we?
I mean, dear listeners, I'm really not able to understand where we are. Lionel, this should be your typical question, but now it becomes my question. But it's not a question of today. It's a question of all my life, listeners.
You seem quite anxious, Ciro. You're well outside your comfort zone. We're in a cable car going up to the summit of Gran Sasso d'Italia. You're a man of sea level. We're in the mountains, but you don't like being in here, do you, with all these people high up above the trees, suspended from a cable?
I mean, suspended from a cable, it's not a real problem, because if I were suspending on a cable, listeners, this cable, I mean, I don't know how much it's safe. Maybe this can be recorded as my last appearance in the cycling podcast.
Well, if it's your last appearance, it will be my last appearance as well.
I'm in a really good company.
When it goes over the pylons, it swings quite a lot.
Yeah.
I hope we're not over the weight.
Yes, exactly. But as I told you, if I were here, but behind me, I mean, under me, there should be the sea, it would be okay. Mm. But it's not the case. So this is my problem.
Well, let's hope we make it to the top. We've got to come down this way. The riders are coming down in a cable car after the stage.
Yes, and the riders, normally this should be a good occasion to speak to riders after the stage, you know.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From Grand Tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Gran Sasso.
Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, nu spigune ci cora, cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, nu spigune ci cora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
Dopo 6 kilometers to go. Lionel, it's very loud, it's very cold. Simon Yates is going to win this stage.
Is that your prediction?
Well, he's the fastest in that group, although Ciccone is the local boy. You can hear his fans just behind us. He's just had another go. Surprised me that he's keeping company with all these top GC contenders.
Well, it's Ciccone, Thibaut Pinot, Pozzovivo, Simon Yates in fourth place. Chris Froome is losing ground now, isn't he?
It seems to be. At first he was getting dropped and we thought it was just the usual Froome yo-yo act, but no, here comes Pozzovivo.
Best finish of the Giro so far.
Well, is the only one we've attempted to commentate on poorly?
I think Rob Hatch is safe.
I think he is very, very safe. But here comes Pozzovivo. But look, Yates is just nestled on third wheel. He's going to come round Lionel any second. You're going to see him.
So a stage win and another time bonus for Yates in the offing.
You can already announce it now. Yates wins. 10-second bonus.
Pozzovivo può venire, non c'è nulla da fare. In questo istante parte Yates, la maglia rosa di Yates ad allungare. Ultime fasi di gara con Yates in testa, che bella azione! La maglia rosa al comando, signore e signori, prepariamoci! Perché uno sprint ragni ristretti, vince Salmon Yates!
How much do I get for that? Hey, how much of a bonus? Never mind the 10-second bonus to Simon Yates. What's my bonus?
Well, the thing is, we've been talking about how Yates and Pinot are the two quickest over the ground, and they've proved it there.
Right, let's go and do some work, Lionel. Off you go. Here you go. Where are you going?
I'm
going
to wait for Froome, I think.
I'm going for Pozzovivo. See you later.
Okay.
Lionel, did you get Froome?
No, I didn't.
I know.
Well, they came around the corner here and they've gone into the Rifugio Campo Imperatore.
Where Mussolini was rescued from.
This is
the exact structure. Is it that building over there? Anyway, one of these three buildings that we can see. Who's going to rescue Chris Froome?
Well, all the riders have gone in there. This is the so-called warm room because it's absolutely freezing up here and the riders are being shepherded in there. Ciro, of course, got in. And then as soon as I tried to get in, a hand on the chest from security stopped from going in.
Chris Froome's bodyguards just disappeared inside, so that's always a good sign. So his arrival outside, out here, should be imminent.
Well, I didn't get to speak to Chris Froome, but Daniel did manage to catch up with Domenico Pozzovivo of Bardet Merida, who's fourth on the stage.
I still had something in the tank in the finale, but the wind put a bit of a mental break on me. I at least wanted to gain some time on the guys who were hurting a bit more than me. In the end, I wasn't too far from the stage win. The whole day was fast and long. It was fast from Calascio onwards. There wasn't a second to even breathe. I'll keep on trying and my day will come. The pink jersey is a dream and we're pretty close now. We can certainly give it a try right up until the time trial.
Grande Pozzo, grande Pozzo, dai che la vinciamo!
Dai!
So, what's the verdict?
I think it was all pretty close in the end. I mean, I think the first 10 guys were all pretty much the same time. I think there was a 10.
Froome was dropped and lost about a minute,
yep.
And Arrow a little bit more. So,
oh, really?
Surprised by that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I didn't know that. I had a few. I was struggling a bit in the end. I couldn't get in my big chain ring, and I stopped to try to get it in, but I just couldn't. In the end, I just got the whole last 800 meters in the little ring, and just ran out of gears and couldn't hold on. But those boys dropped. I mean, that's nice going into the rest day actually for me.
And I guess a sign that it was a hard day and not just a hard final climb.
It was just 225k, and you got to remember the altitude. The altitude and 2,000 metres, and I think we're starting to see that fatigue coming, you know, the end of the second week and halfway nearly, and seeing those cracks in the other guys is good. And I think if they crack today, we're going to see even bigger gaps in the coming days.
That was George Bennett. I suppose he didn't really realise how well he'd done today. Going to try and get a word with someone in the Sky camp. We're still waiting for Froome, but I can see Nicolas Portal, director sportif of Sky. Let's see what he's made of Chris Froome's day. So Nico, we all saw Chris getting dropped with the kilometres to go. We thought that it was the normal thing that Chris does, and then he was going to get back on. And what was he telling you?
Well, no, you know what? Nothing actually. He just asked Sergio to don't wait for him. But I think Sergio straight away waits for him anyway. Not a really good day for him today. I'm sure he had some better hope. The last couple of days he was getting better and giving him a lot of confidence or so I think he was hoping for best for more than that. But yes, 1k and a half from the top, started to drop one time, he came back and then he dropped again. So at the end, I think it's 1:07, so this is not the best for sure, but let's say it's 2 weeks race again. So we need to keep fighting and anyway, the guys, they are on a good sprint. Chris also, so we know it's a big challenge to win the Giro, so let's make the best of it.
And has it taken him longer than people realised to get over the crash from last week, or was the crash a bit more serious than people realised?
Well, I don't really want to say that it's a crash, because people always said they try to find some excuses. But yeah, when someone crashing at the speed or even on going up yesterday, the good thing is I have nothing broken, and it was on pain, but you don't really like when you crash, obviously, and the body inside reacting sometimes is a bit different, so for sure there's some impact. But I will not say that's because he crashed that he dropped a 1k to go. I think it's a combination of a bit of everything. The plan was for him to don't start also on the best condition, because he got the two in mind or so, but and build up to the second part of the second week or the third week. So, but the crashes and everything for sure that not help.
Well, I've no idea where Daniel is, but I'm in the room where the cable cars come in, and it's quite chaotic in here. The riders are coming up. They come round the back way. Some of them are coming with their bikes. They're all wrapped up pretty warm because it's very cold here. Quite unusual. I've never seen anything like this before. A Grand Tour, the riders going down in a cable car. Here's Tom Dumoulin. I think they're pretty keen to all get down as quickly as possible. I lost sight of Daniel and somehow managed to sneak my way into the waiting room where the riders and their team helpers were waiting for the cable car. It was all a bit chaotic in there, but I managed to speak to EF Education First rider Hugh Carthy, who was in the break all day, Tom Dumoulin's domestique Sam Ooman, and Sean Kelly, who is here working for Eurosport. You're refueling after what I must imagine is a pretty hard stage.
No, it was a long day.
Are you able to put it into context with other hard days you've done?
I mean, the break, you just go kind of smooth all day, so. But some days are harder when you go harder and easier and harder and easier, so.
You gave it a real go trying to close down the gap in the final 5k or so.
Yeah, I knew it was over by then, but what can you do?
What's going through your mind trying to calculate what's the best moment, what's the best move to follow?
I don't know, I was watching the most experienced riders in the group and trying not to do any more than them. yeah, that was about it.
But in terms of a big day out in a Grand Tour, you've got to be pleased with how you rode.
Yeah, it was a long day out, but in the end for nothing.
Have you ever got down from a mountain in a cable car after a race?
No, and until I get down, I still haven't.
well done. Thank you. Sam, I'm from the Cycling Podcast. Can I ask you a couple of questions? Sam, from the team's perspective, are you happy with how it went today?
Yes, definitely. I think Tom really managed to keep the damage low. And yeah, obviously they need to catch more time on him. And from what I could see on the final climb, he was quite in control all the time. And yeah, it looks pretty good to me.
So a week into the race, he's in a very strong position, and I guess the next big battleground is the Zonkerland next Saturday.
Yeah, is there not something else coming up already before? I don't know, it's a Giro, so every day there will be something crazy coming up, I think. But yeah, Zonkerland is obviously a big appointment. I think from all the climbs, that is the climb that that suits guys like Chavez or Posse Vivo the most, rather than Tom, so that would be definitely a really difficult and important day.
What did you make of the climb today?
Me, myself. I just try to, every day, try to hang on as long as possible for at Tom's wheel. So in case something happens, I'm there for him to chase, whether it's possible or not, or if he has a flat tire or whatever. And just also to be there, you know, that he doesn't have the feeling like he's all alone. Because he's a guy that's being attacked all the time, actually. And once today I didn't have my best day, so then I got dropped for one moment, and I get the team is fine if I just then do my own pace and try to hang on as long as possible. And now I was with Ahu and Froome, and then I can be I just try to hang on daily wheels then.
Lastly, is it a concern that riders like Simon Yates and perhaps Pinot can steal the time bonuses? Every second counts. We saw that last year.
Yeah, every second counts. That's definitely true. So I don't know how much the difference is at the moment, but every second counts. That's true what you say, yeah.
And have you ever taken a cable car down from a mountain finish?
Not from a mountain finish, but on my holidays I did, yeah.
But it's a new experience at a race.
Yeah, it's a new experience, yeah. And maybe we're going to miss out because she's pretty busy again.
Well, I hope I'm going to get down, but you're going to get down before me, I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
Did you ever have to take a cable car down after a stage in a Grand Tour when you were riding?
In the Grand Tour, no. But in the Dauphiné, yes, in Grenoble.
It's not been very popular with the riders.
Well, I can understand why it's not popular with the riders. If you look at the last number of days, yesterday the riders arrived at the top of the mountain. There were to be three team cars allowed up. Then the teams were told, oh no, you can't take a the tour car up, we were stopped the last moment, the riders had nothing to change. It's not good, and it's normal the riders are not happy. I can understand why.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney, and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel.
And that opening montage of sounds from the Gran Sasso d'Italia kind of summed up our afternoon and early evening, didn't it?
Very chaotic. I can see you're a bit stressed, Lionel. I can see you stressed. Dial it down. We're about to eat. You're about to have a beer. It's all going to be fine.
I don't make out that I'm the only one getting a bit stressed this evening.
You'll never see me stressed.
Oh. Sorry, my beer just went down the wrong way there. No, what a day for Simon Yates and Mitchelton Scott. They now have Yates in first place and Chavez in second, thanks to the time bonuses. Pretty much as we predicted over the last day or so, Yates...
We occasionally get things right. We've been harping on about this, haven't we, for a few days, that Simon Yates was the fastest rider of that gaggle, who were probably going to come in together in some mountain stages, probably in a couple of stages this weekend, and sure enough.
Well, you called it on the line as we were watching the last couple of kilometres there in... it was chilly up there. The air was very fresh, wasn't it? But there's always that doubt, isn't there? 225 kilometres in their legs. Will the legs respond when the speed is required? And in Simon Yates' case, and to a large degree, Thibaut Pinot looked pretty much, you know, as good as I've seen him, really. So those two, obviously a very good day. Much less so for Chris Froome and Fabio Aru, who lost time. But I'll run through the nuts and bolts of what happened, because it was a day when there was a race for the stage as well as the battle between the GC riders. And
race for the cable car as well.
Oh, well, that was a shambles.
As far as we were concerned, that was the pick story. Listeners don't really want to hear too much about that, but I think they're going to get some of...
Well, I think because it affected the riders, and that's what's most important about that whole farrago up there. But we'll come to that a little bit later on. The stage was stage 9 from Pesco Sanita to Gran Sasso d'Italia, 225 kilometres, as I said. It went over Roccarasso, the climb where Tim Wellens won in the Giro a couple of years ago, where they went over and back down the other side and then headed towards the final climb. There was a break of 13 riders. I'll run through them. It was Mikel Schurel of AG2R. Androni got two in there today. The 100% record continues for Gianni Savio.
Gianni Savio is purring in the press room when he completes his rounds of the press room, goes in every day to see all the journalists, and he's purring like a Cheshire cat on Prozac.
Well, he had Fausto Masnada and Davide Ballerini in the break today. Bahrain Merida also had two riders, Manuele Boaro and Giovanni Visconti, as did Trek, Gianluca Brambilla and Laurent Didier. The other riders in the group, Cesare Benedetti of Bora, Tim Wellens of Lotto, Nat Behane of Dimension Data, Hugh Carthy of EF Education First, Maxim Belkov of Katusha, and Alex Turin of Villa Triestina. They had quite a big gap at one point. When we arrived at the finish, they were still 9 minutes up the road. But as they reached the bottom of the final climb with sort of 26.5 kilometres to go, it was down to 3 minutes 50 and looking touch and go. And there were some tired old riders in there. It all began to kind of break up and kick off with around 18-19 kilometres to go. That's when Masnada went solo and was looking really good for a while. Not a rider I've seen anything of before. A new one certainly for us. And when Daniel shakes his head about obscure, hipsterish Italian pro-continental riders, then I know there's not some big story lurking. Yeah, but we'll try and maybe, when we speak to Gianni Savio, we're going to have to find out about some of these guys. That Masnada's move off the front coincided with Mitchelton Scott getting to the front of the GC group, and they were winding it all in because they had their eyes on the stage win and the time bonus. Manuele Boaro went behind Masnada, and those two were chasing one another they weren't chasing one another, were they? Boaro was chasing. For a while, Masnada looked good. But he was fading. Then Hugh Carthy made a move with 5 kilometres to go, and as you heard, he felt he left it too late. he was swept up with around 4 kilometres to go, and then Masnada lasted till around about 3 to go, and then we had some splits happening. Fabio Aru was in trouble already by this stage, and then came the race for the stage win. Giulio Cicconi had a couple of attacks.
The local boy.
Yeah.
We went into Abruzzo today. We started in Campania, and we went into Abruzzo, and Cicconi is from Abruzzo.
He had one go of quite a long way out, and then had another go around just over a kilometre out. In the meantime, Miguel Angel Lopez also had a little dig, but none of that succeeded, and it came down to this sprint between Simon Yates. Well, Domenico Pozzovivo was looking really good for a little while, wasn't he? And then, Yates had the gas to win the stage, extend his lead in the pink jersey. He actually won the stage ahead of Pino and Chavez, so they swept up the time bonuses. Pozzovivo and Carapaz were next, then Formolo, then Bennett, Dumoulin and Lopez. And the big losers were Chris Froome, 1:07 down, and Aru, 1:27 down. So Yates and Chavez now 1 and 2 overall. Froome has slipped out of the top 10 to 11th, 2:37 down. And Daniel, I'm surprised your rumour, which originated from the queue for the... You've converted it into English.
Was it not Hans Kolk from NOS, the Dutch broadcaster?
It was.
Who suggested to me that Chris Froome might be leaving tomorrow morning, in which case he's given me the slip, because we've got an appointment with him. We're going to speak to him tomorrow at 11 o'clock. But, Lionel, when was the last time, and I don't know the answer to this, when was the last time Chris Froome lost that much time in a mountain stage?
That is a very good question.
I mean, I almost feel that this is being overlooked, the magnitude, the importance of this moment, because it's not quite Indy Rain at Les Arcs, but this is the first time we've really seen him. I mean, it was so close to the finish, can you really talk about him cracking? But certainly conceding a big wedge of time in the mountains,
and not looking very good in the process. I mean, that's a thing. I mean, it's not that it's come out of the blue either, is it? He's been faltering all week, really, since the crash before the opening time trial back in Jerusalem. He's not looked convincing anywhere. There was about a 500 metre section on Etna where he looked half decent. He slipped and on that right hand corner yesterday, landed on his side again, the side that he'd landed on in Israel. The Skybus last night didn't feel a particularly happy place. And today, he's now 11th, 2:37 down. And no matter how good he is, I would say that is going to be difficult, very, very difficult to peg back.
I think he's got almost a week now of... Well, it depends. I mean, there are a couple of stages this week coming in, Umbria and Le Marche. Particularly stage in Le Marche, I think, will reserve a few surprises. That region is notorious for its short, steep climbs. If we get fairly innocuous stages where a break goes away and the GC guys don't really test each other, he could potentially have 3 or 4 days now to recover, and in anticipation of another big weekend next week with the Zonkerland. And I would suggest he's not quite out of the running yet for this Giro.
No, he's not, but the certainly not when you look at Simon Yates. 2:37, you know, he could chisel that away enough on the climbs and then take a big wedge. I mean, Simon Yates said in his to the media afterwards, you know, he thinking in terms of 2-3 minutes that he could lose to Froome in that time trial over 34.5 kilometres. But it's the gap to Dumoulin that's the problem. Dumoulin is third, 38 seconds behind Yates, so 1:59 ahead of Froome. Froome's not going to take anything like that from Dumoulin in a time trial, so he's got to claw his way back on the Zonkerland and really make some serious time gains and stop giving it away in chunks.
Do we think, Lionel, that the way Mitchelton Scott played it today reflects the fact that they believe they've played their big card, they've played their ace, and now all they need to do is chip away using this tactic, using this ploy that we've talked about of really unleashing Simon Yates in the last 500 metres of these mountain stages where there are time bonuses on offer? And, you know, he can accumulate. He's already accumulated. I mean, he got some bonus seconds yesterday, didn't he? More today, and that's 12 more seconds. Was it 12 more? Was he third yesterday or second? Third yesterday. So, you know, he could potentially... What's his... You're the man with the GC in front of him, Lionel. What's his advantage on GC from Dumoulin?
38 seconds.
38 seconds. So if he can get to a minute...
gives him something to defend.
To Trento, then he's got mountain stages the other side of that, and he'll be able to play it or stake it all on that last weekend in the High Mountains. I say High Mountains. We spoke to Simon Yates, or I spoke to Simon Yates before the Giro, didn't I, about, well, he said to me how important it was going to be to perform well at high altitude in this Giro. Today was the first finish above 2,000 metres. There are going to be more climbs above 2,000 metres, more long climbs, and it was a very encouraging performance as far as Mitchelton were concerned.
San Francisco. A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. This morning at the start, I had an appointment with... he didn't know this.
Appointment?
He didn't know this. Yeah, it wasn't an appointment. I had to go and present Jack Haig with a prize that he was previously unaware that he'd won, but was delighted to receive. He is the first pedaleur de charme of the Giro d'Italia, voted by the listeners, and I presented him with his Rafa pedaleur de charme t-shirt, and had a very brief chat with him too. Jack, it was a painful start for you in the Giro, but you've been pedalling very well, doing a lot of work. How has it been this first week?
It's been pretty good. The team's riding super well. I think we can't ask much more with the Simon in the pink jersey and Chavez sitting right up there in GC.
What's it actually like working for the race leader in the Giro?
Quite special. It's quite nice, to be honest.
And on the climb yesterday, were you feeling good?
Yeah, relatively good.
What's the plan today? It's a harder climb, isn't it? But you've got so much climbing talent in the team. Is it a case of rotating round the responsibility?
Yeah, a little bit. I think we can be quite confident in the team and the ability that we have, so it's not too bad.
Lastly, our listeners have voted you Pedaleur de Charme for your charming pedalling style during the week. We've got the t-shirt for you here. Hope you agree, it's a lovely design.
It is a lovely design, and thank you very much to all the listeners for donating the shirt to me.
He was a little reluctant to spare time talking. The Mitchelton Scott riders, nearly said Orica there, but we've had our moratorium on errors in the podcast. The Mitchelton Scott riders stayed in the bus till right towards this the call to the line, and it did strike me just from Jack Haig's demeanour, because he's pretty open and smiley and chatty. Just what a big day those guys had in front of them. 235 kilometres. They'd done a lot of work on yesterday's stage on the final climb and did the same again today, and there must have been a sense of trepidation. Are they going to be up to it? But what really struck me was that Jack Haig was back there at the front again, and the likes of Roman Kreuziger and Mikel Nieve have yet to do anything. You know, they really haven't had to get on the front and start driving things along yet, and that must be a tremendous advantage for Mitchelton Scott looking towards the final week, when you bear in mind also that there will have to be a selection between Yates and Chavez if they're so close on GC. They've still got one or other of them to put to the wheel.
They're the only team in anything remotely close to that position. Pino is very much isolated at FDJ. Well, it's very much all for one. Same with Freeman Sky, same with Miguel Angel Lopez. Although Peo Bilbao was riding high in the general classification, but we really know that Lopez is their leader. And Pozzovivo is the same with Bahrain Merida. And that is the real value added that Mitchelton Scott have. I think it's getting, well, it's looking increasingly difficult to beat them in this Giro.
Well, particularly with the time gaps that have opened up, everybody else is really on their own, aren't they? And that's going to be really fascinating to watch. It's a bit like attack versus defence in football, isn't it? That now it's up to the others, but somebody, you know, they're going to need to work together a little bit, and knowing that they could well fall out of contention themselves if they do too much. It could well be that everyone is fairly defensive, because they haven't got enough to land a knockout blow themselves, and they'll need to form some alliances. And that will play into the hands of Mitchelton Scott.
Paradoxically, Lionel, I think that Fabio Adel and Chris Froome now become even more dangerous in a certain way to Mitchelton Scott, because neither of those two riders is really going to be satisfied with a podium finish. And they are almost in a position where they start going for broke and they start throwing the kitchen sink at it. And that could unleash a kind of chaos which is not going to be very easy to deal with, even for Mitchelton Scott. There are so many riders still in contention. If Froome goes, if Aru goes on one of these medium mountain stages in Umbria or Le Marche, and someone, you know, one of those other guys who are still closer to Yates are in the move, then it could get very interesting indeed.
What about Tom Dumoulin then? I mean, I spoke to Sam Ooman, and that's his Team Sunweb teammate. Ooman, he said, he's very satisfied with how the day went. Dumoulin is in a very strong position because he knows he has that time trial to come, and he's not been significantly distanced by Yates and Chavez, and he's ahead of everybody else. I mean, he's in a fabulous position already, and knows what it's going to take in the final week. He has been there 12 months ago and done it. I would say he will be extremely satisfied with the way today went. And I think Pino and Pozzovivo as well, you know, looking bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, crunchy, or whatever it was. Was it crunchy, Pino?
The journalist at Corriere della Sera who wrote that didn't like the fact that I'd translated it into English and suggested... Well, it was completely innocuous. I was just reflecting on the fact that, you know, it was an idiom. It's an idiomatic use of the word crunchy in Italian.
Does it mean kind of gritty rather than...
No, it kind of means sprightly.
Oh,
But it doesn't really work in English. You can't really say a rider is crunchy.
No.
Anyway, I wasn't mocking our colleague, Gaia Picardi, but I don't think she was very pleased that I picked up on that. Thibaut Pinot, this is a world exclusive. I might have lunch with Thibaut Pinot tomorrow.
Really?
Well, no. Groupama FDJ have invited journalists to speak to Pinot around midday tomorrow, and they've said you're very welcome to stay for lunch afterwards.
Oh, and how nice. Was that Eliza Madio?
It was.
She tipped us off about how the riders were getting from their warm room. Just to explain a little bit about the finish there at Gran Sasso, they came over the line and they were immediately whisked left past the finish line into possibly Mussolini's mountaintop bunker. Did we get to the bottom of that? That was from last night's episode, Daniel's story about the Second World War. There were several buildings up there, weren't there? But it may well have been Mussolini's hideout. Anyway, it was described as a warm room in the communique issued by the organisers. And a few riders tweeted to say how much they appreciated that, because it was cold up there. There were no race vehicles, team cars and buses up there. So they wanted to get as warm and as possible, as quickly as possible, get wrapped up. It all went a little bit awry after that. The riders then had to go down in the cable car, and I was tipped off that there was a sort of secret cut through to get them into the building where the cable car left, and I managed to sneak in there. Chiro was in there as well. Daniel, you got cut the wrong side of the cut. You weren't allowed in until Sean Kelly and Mauro Venni intervened. Sean Kelly, commentating for Eurosport, only ever rode the Giro once and didn't finish, but obviously won the Vuelta, won lots of classics. And there was a bit of banter going on outside there. Wasn't
banter?
Banter.
Banter.
About.
That's a euphemism.
Well,
it almost got quite nasty.
Did it? I mean, it was a shambles
Sean,
up there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Sean said something like, can you get us in there? Can you get us in there?
Yeah.
And then he got on the phone got Sean and Rob Hatch and Carlton Kirby from Eurosport let in. You got let in slightly afterwards.
No, he definitely did not. He responded, his response to Sean Kelly was, if you don't like it, you can go home.
Oh, I thought that came afterwards.
No.
Anyway, Sean smiled and said, that's a first. He's obviously not heard that before. The riders inside that little building, I mean, there wasn't any anger or anything, but they didn't look terribly chuffed that they had to stand and wait for the cable car. It wasn't a terribly well-oiled operation. And I mean, you know, anyone watching at home on TV, you know, this will perhaps not even occurred to them how the riders would get down today. Have to say, the The actual race looked stunning.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think RCS might have reservations about returning to Gran Sasso d'Italia after the fiasco at the finish. It was a bit of a fiasco. It was a fiasco that was actually dangerous for spectators as well, because it's over 2,000 metres above sea level. It was cold up there, and there were people who were going to be potentially waiting up there for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours.
Well, we were there two hours.
However, the natural theatre or amphitheatre that plateau on Gran Sasso provides is really quite something, as you'll have seen watching on TV.
Well, I wonder whether they took a lead from the Tour de France last year when on the Issoire they basically ensured that there were no race vehicles at all, and the photographs look stunning. There were no spectators either, and it gave the picture the real kind of early 20th century kind of feel. And yeah, it was stark by the fact that there were no vehicles in the pictures, no team buses all parked up, no camper vans, as you so often see in the mountain stages. It looked absolutely beautiful. But of course, to achieve that, everyone had to go up and down by the cable car, and there were only two cable cars, and it was an absolute mess up there. And I do get
what
a sense...
Was it Lionel Lenz Italian? You know this word.
It was a casino.
Correct.
Rispetto alle altre zone di Doc, c'è una delle migliori, o c'è...
Ma devi quella vedere qua, più o meno tutte buone.
Ah, ho capito.
Poi c'è quella che la fa un po' più salata, quella che la fa più dura.
What we got here? Lui sta registrando what? Una cosa.
Buffalo mozzarella.
The buffalo's not here, but is the buffalo mozzarella is very much in evidence.
Well, he's here in cheese form. It looks...
That's the best form for him, I would suggest.
€10 a kilo. I can't work out if that's cheap or expensive.
No idea, Lionel. I'm not a big mozzarella aficionado. A keen consumer, but not a huge aficionado. I know that mozzarella di bufala from this region, Campania, is the only one that has its own DOC. That's like a designated region where the ingredients are controlled, the processes are controlled. So this is the best mozzarella you'll ever taste, Lionel. So I think you need to go and taste your panino now.
Well, what have I got? I've got prosciutto and mozzarella, have I?
Yeah, you have.
Did you hear in the podcast just before the Giro that the Irish might be starting to make mozzarella cheese?
Bah!
I thought you wouldn't like that.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you'd like to get 25% off all Science in Sport products, go to their website, scienceinsport.com, and when you check out, enter the code SISCP25. Just before that, you heard something else that relates to nutrition loosely. We stopped off in Campania this afternoon. We went into what was basically a service station, and in the service station, they were selling big plastic bags of buffalo mozzarella, and it reminded us that Richard Moore's not here, the buffalo's not here, you know, I mean, missing him.
As soon as you saw that mozzarella, you started missing him, didn't you? You hadn't mentioned him for a few days before that, but then as soon as you saw that mozzarella...
Oh, that's not true. But yeah, the buffalo mozzarella, well, it's the region's famous for it, of course. You were aghast at the idea that the Irish might start making it, but there we go. We've now reached a rest day. I was tempted to say...
We've reached a restaurant as well, thankfully.
Yeah.
After a very, tortuous, difficult, long drive.
The listeners don't want to know about,
they don't want to know. Plenty last week, didn't they? When you were bombarding them with your tales of woe.
Oh, they don't want to hear about this. We will have dinner this evening. Hurrah. I was going to say that the Giro's reached the end of its first phase, but it hasn't really, because there have been several phases within this first 9 days of racing. Of course, the Israel bit at the start, and then the long transfer, and then Sicily with its sort of challenging logistics for the teams as well. I mean, they were back and across the island and spending a lot of time in the team bus and the team car, getting across the Strait of Messina. And since then, we really have had the you know, the accelerator pushed down. We've covered hundreds of kilometres. I mean, we're past Rome now, aren't we? And we're in the Apennines, and we're then heading across. Tonight we'll be staying not far from Pescara, and then the race will continue. It's almost like leaping up the what is it? Up the calf the of Pesa. Italy.
Oh, yeah. Well, under the kneecap.
Up to the kneecap, yeah. What have we made of the race so far? I think it's a stark contrast to last year, where I can remember at this stage last year, we were still wondering whether the Giro was going to get started. And, of course, it was the 100th edition. It was supposed to be spectacular and special, and nothing much had happened by this stage. Whereas this year, we've boiled down the race for the GC, and I would say that really there's seven riders solidly in it, and everyone else
That's a lot. I mean, you said the racing has really kicked off.
For the podium then,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, the racing, you know, you say it's kicked off. I would suggest it's still, there's still quite a lot of conservative racing going on. That's not to say it's not fast, because it is. I don't think anyone's sort of holding back and in terror, in fear of the last week, as we said a couple of days ago. They were last year. However, I think it'll be interesting to see this week whether we start to see the effects of the eight-man teams. Don't forget, this is the first Grand Tour for many years ever.
Right up to the sort of mid-80s, it was still 10-man teams. Yeah, wasn't it? So sometimes even more before that.
It is for several decades that the first time we've had eight-man teams. And these stages in the Apennines over the next few days, they're sort of classed as transitional stages, medium mountain stages. They don't look as difficult as some of the equivalent stages in previous editions. However, the fact that there are only eight riders on most teams, and unless they've lost some along the way, that might start to have a bit of an effect this week, and things might start to get a bit chaotic, which is what we hope.
Well, I think the thing that strikes me is how thoughtfully, really, Mitchelton Scott have gone about things. They've targeted the time bonuses cleverly when they've been able to. You know, they managed to catapult Chavez back up there with the break on the stage to Etna. And really, so far, it's going extremely well for them. Everybody else must look at that and think, maybe we should have been on the offensive at this stage. But of course, we don't know yet how the final week is going to pan out, do we? That will, of course, be revealed.
When does the moment come when the rest of the peloton, the rest of the field, decides that Mitchelton Scott are by far the most powerful team in the race, and it's up to them to take it all on, and no one else is going to do anything until the moment comes where they fire their leaders off down the road?
Well, it could well be that it's not until the Zonkalan that they have really any opportunity, because it needs to be really hard certainly for the likes of Froome, Aru and Lopez to haul themselves back up. You know, if they were to get within a minute and a half or, you know, 50 seconds of Simon Yates, all of a sudden it's all to play for again, isn't it? But at the moment they're just on the periphery of things. But like you said earlier, that's quite a powerful set of allies. If they were to choose to watch out for each other and take the fight to Mitchelton Scott, because it would be all in all of their interest to make it really aggressive, make it hard. But we shall see how that all goes. There's a long way to go before we get there.
Rest day tomorrow, Lionel. What we got coming tomorrow? We got a kilometer zero. I might have lunch with Thibaut Pinot. What is the kilometer zero?
The kilometre zero is about Thomas Dekker,
Thomas Dekker and Tom Dumoulin in a certain, as Thierry would say, in a certain way.
Mm.
It is about
A Venn diagram involves three things, but they're circles that don't really overlap.
No,
but they do touch slightly because they're both Dutch.
It's a kind of
sliding doors,
isn't
it?
But who is the sort of mousy but likeable Gwyneth Paltrow who I can't remember the storyline now. One of them becomes very glamorous,
right,
and I think her life goes completely wrong, and the other one, you know, kind of continues in a sort of honest...
Well, let's put it this way. Thomas Dekker had a lot of promise and didn't fulfil it and took a few wrong turns.
Well, I tell you what, should we hear a little clip from tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, give you a bit of a taste? We spoke mostly about Thomas Dekker, but here he is talking about cycling in general and how it's changed since he retired in 2014.
I also want to give my compliments to Spakenbrink, who I also was laughing in the beginning sometimes with, but he saw already a clear vision how cycling at least needed to change a little bit. And we still have a lot of old school shit around us, but at least a few people, I really believe that Tom Dumoulin won the Giro d'Italia clean from the bottom of my heart. And it's not my friend and I don't know him really well, but that's my gut feeling. And that's amazing that you, like, I remember coming here in 2005 and we had Basso Salvadelli, and I was 20 years old and I was just crying in my hotel room and I was so tired, and I was still going strong in the time trials, but it all changed, you know. Before it was, yeah, before it was absolutely not honest. At least now there's some progress.
There'll be no regular episode tomorrow from us here at the Giro. We'll have a bit of a rest. I mean, you're off for lunch with Thibaut Pinot. Well, what am I doing? I'm off to the Laundrette, the Lavanderia. Is that right?
I think. Lavanderia.
Yeah. Okay. We will be back with Stage 10 on Tuesday evening. But if you're looking for something to listen to on Monday, by Monday late afternoon, early evening, there may well be the first episode of our... I don't know what we're going to call it, but listeners have been calling in with their questions, leaving their
press
questions on WhatsApp.
We're calling it a press conference.
We could call it
a press conference.
Yeah. So we will answer all the questions that have been phoned in, as long as they are clean and decent and won't get us into tricky legal territory. But we will try and answer as many as we can, space permitting, and we'll post that on Monday evening. Other than that, well, I think we've earned a rest day. I mean, I think I was in Israel a week ago. You were in Yorkshire a week ago, Daniel. It's like it's not like either of us have had we haven't had a gentle introduction to this Giro. It's felt challenging at times. I can't remember a grand tour that has been as logistically tricky right from the off as this.
But no moaning, no excuses.
That's not moaning. That's not moaning.
And say
it always makes me recognise that the riders. All right, it's easier for them in a lot of senses that off the bike, a lot of the stuff is done for them. You know, they don't have to think about the logistics, but they've still had to do all that travelling.
Let's say goodbye to the listeners. Wish them good night before we take a turn to negative town.
Well, yeah, the sat nav doesn't take us to negative town. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.